This is Living Real Radio, real issues in real time with your host, John Angotti, Greg Walton, and Julianne Staley. Living Real Radio is sponsored by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized by Closets by Design. Call them today to schedule your appointment at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.
Good morning. Welcome to Living Real Radio. John Angotti here with Julianne Staley. Craig Walton is sick.
Yes, he's under the weather.
He is under the weather, so we'll keep Greg in prayer and send him some Alka-Seltzer Plus or something. Yeah. But today, Julianne and I are here. It's October is Right to Life month, is it not?
It starts in September, yeah, and it's the 40 days for life. And it ends October 21st, I believe.
October
22nd.
Okay.
Or no, it goes to the end of October to make 40. That makes sense.
Okay. And since we're kind of in the middle of that, today, me healing up from my double knee replacement, my biological father from West Virginia, Ron Watson, was in town to drive me around and chauffeur me and stuff like that. So since it's Right to Life month, and we kind of have a unique story about that, so I thought we'd have Ron tell his side of the story of how things came to be. So from all the way from Lost Creek, West Virginia, Ron Watson.
Well, thank you very much, John, and nice meeting you. So to be here and the Right to Life.
Yeah, that's right. And so I, being an adopted child, it's just the story, I think, that adoption being an option, that I'm not sure how much is pursued when people are, you know, when they have a, the option for, you know, they're thinking about abortion or that's going to ruin their life or all this other kind of stuff. You know, I'm not sure how much adoption is pushed. But then also these days, adoption is so difficult to adopt children that for some reason, I'm not sure why it's so difficult. I don't know the ins and outs of all that.
I don't either, yeah.
But I just know that it's hard for people to, and costly.
Very, very costly.
You know,
I think that's a bigger piece.
Yeah.
How much it costs.
And I'm not sure why that is as well when so many willing, you know, families are wanting children and can't necessarily afford to go through the process and all that kind of stuff. But I was born in the mid 60s and it's a unique story. I knew my birth mother died a few years ago at 63, but it's a unique story. So you think we just jump into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Ron, if you're willing to talk about that back in the mid 60s and when you were in high school.
I was going to say, you look great for as old as your son is.
Yeah. No, I think during my era, it's a different generation. And when you start talking about life and sex, the education back in the early days of the 50s and 60s, how did you learn? How did you learn about it? And as kids, you really didn't have any kind of parental, and most of us was raised by grandparents back then. And so you didn't have anybody telling you about the do's and the don'ts and the why's not. And so, you know, how do you learn? You don't get it in school then. So it was just something that basically I reckon you happened. And of course, at that particular time, you don't know what's going on. You know, you don't know. It's not a planned parent. So, you know, you're just out there as kids experimenting. And this is what happens. And in this case, thank God for the Angottis. Thank God for the adoption. And I think you know more about on the mother's side, but it was my understanding that her parents didn't know at all that Judy was bearing child. And I think from what I understand is, you know, being coming from the farm, she was in the hay field, and her water broke.
Wow.
And that was the first that her parents knew about it. So, I mean, it was sort of kept secretively, and I don't know who she had told or not told. And, you know, from my standpoint, heck, I was already in the service, married, and moving on. So, I mean, it was, it's something that when you look back at it, you say, how do we at least this generation give them the opportunity to at least know that choices have consequences? And in most cases, you know, from the female having babies, the daddy's gone. I mean, he don't care. I mean, that's part of it. So there you have a single mother, and the only option that they have at that time is really the negative we know, or for adoption. And, you know, thank God, John, in this case, that the end goddess was there ready and willing. So
My parents adopted four kids.
Wow.
So we were all adopted from different families. And the way I found out about my birth side of the family was in this small town in West Virginia. I was on my way to into the Navy music program, and in the late 80s. And you needed a birth certificate to get in. Back in those days, they were paper birth certificates. And so we had used them all up, and my mother didn't have one in this little safe thing that she kept all that stuff in. So I knew that I was born in this little town called Philippi. That's what we're here at St. Philip. It's kind of unique,
wow.
Right? You know? So Philippi, West Virginia. So I went to the courthouse and got the birth certificate, and I knew I was born in this Alderson Broaddus Hospital, which was on the hillside up there. It's a small college. And so I went up to, I was always curious, because I used to tell my father, Johnny B, I used to tell him that I didn't think I belonged there. You know, all my cousins were real dark Italian, dark complected, and looked different, you know, I always felt a little bit odd or a little bit out. And I used to say, I think I belong to the Rockefeller family is what I used to tell him. I belong to the Rockefeller family. So I went to the, up to the records room. And I asked who was born on August 20th, 1963. And so the lady went and looked and came back, and there was two children born that day, one boy, one girl. So I figured I was the boy.
Boy, yeah. Right?
And so his name was Joseph Kennedy. And so I had just graduated college. So this was 86, I think. And I was working at this funeral home for summer to make some money before I went into the service and to the music program. And this guy there, I was telling him about, his name was Randy Amos. And I was telling him about this, and he looked at me and he said, "I know Judy Kennedy." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I know this story. I was there when this was all going down." I said, "What?
Oh my gosh."
And, so he said, "She works right down the street at Kroger, and her name's, Judy Hartzell now." And I said, "Well," I said, "I know Mike Hartzell." I said, "You know, we lived together and stuff." And he said, "Well, that's her son." So I had known of this half brother of mine.
I just got chills. Wow.
That I didn't know I had. So I went down to Kroger and kind of scoped it out. There was a guy named Billy Tiana, and I knew. And so I went to Billy and I said, "Hey, which one's Judy? Judy Hartzell?" And he said, "She works there in the meat department over there." So I went over there and scoped it out, and she was just a cute little thing. And eventually got the nerve to go to her and say, "Hey, I think I'm your son." And it kind of got real emotional at that point. And, you know, just granted, I was 21 years old at this time.
Wow.
22 years old. So.
And that's when you found out.
And that's, well, that's when I found out who she was. I always knew we were adopted.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I thought you
found. My parents never denied, you know, they always told us that we were adopted and that, you know, we were special because we were chosen and other people's parents had to keep their kids where they got to choose this kind of thing, you know. And, later on in life, through adopted children struggle with this thing called separation anxiety that you don't know you have. So I always had trouble with relationships and just trusting that somebody loved you kind of thing. So in 2005, when my marriage started falling apart, that I went to see a counselor and my father had just died. And he was a good man. They were older when they adopted us kind of thing. But, you know, he worked two jobs, put food on the table, made sure that we went, had Catholic education, make sure that we got up and went to church on Sunday and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, our Italian heritage was very important to us because my grandparents, the non-biological side, were all from Italy and all that kind of thing. So family and faith was really instilled in us. So I went to see a counselor about, you know, the marriage issues and stuff I was having. And so they wanted to do this therapy on me. It deals with rapid eye movement where they tap. There's some nerve that when they tap on the knees, it generates something in the brain that starts to generate where the memory is of where the wound may be so that then you can start healing process if you don't know where the wound is, right? So earlier that, so when we went into this process, there was about 20 people in this room and you had to write down what was your trauma, what you thought your trauma was. Well, back in those days, the strict Italian upbringing, there wasn't a lot of like, let me hold you, baby. Come here, honey. I love you.
Right.
You know, my mother was busy. She had four kids. My father's working two jobs. It was, I love you. Go to bed. You know, and if you misbehaved, there was nothing to get your butt beat. I mean, like I get a switch off the tree and smack you on the back of the leg or pout in the mouth. And, you know, those were things that just, that's just the way it was back mm-hmm. then. Today, you know, people get sued for child abuse and all that kind of stuff. But so I always thought that that was my trauma, that my mother really didn't love me because she would always beat the crap out of me. And I always felt distant being an adopted child and spent a lot of time in my room alone kind of thing. Mm. So anyway, so they start doing this. So I drew this picture of my mother like whipping us. And I'm in this session and this guy's doing this tapping thing on me. And you're supposed to close your eyes and think about that memory. So I start thinking about that memory and nothing was happening. So I thought, man, this is BS. So I told the counselor, I was like, this really isn't working for me. And she says to me, she says, think about the earliest memory that you could possibly imagine. And then we'll go from there. So the earliest memory I have is when I was four and I had pneumonia and they thought I was going to die at four. And I just remember being in this oxygen tent that they would put on you. And so I remember that vividly. So I started thinking about that. And so he's doing this tapping thing on me. And all of a sudden, I got my eyes closed. I feel myself go down this tube.
Ooh.
And I come out the other side and I'm face to face with my father who had passed away a few months earlier.
Uh-huh.
And he's radiant and he looks at me and he says, I'm sorry, son. We just didn't know. And I'm like, what? What didn't you know? We just didn't know. Your mother and I, we just didn't know. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he says, we love you so much. We just love you so much. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then the next vision I had was the vision of what I imagined Jesus looking like. And so Jesus puts his arms around me and he looks at me and he says, I love you more than you'll ever understand. And I need you to go on this mission for me, which is right before I went on the road full time to go do full time ministry. It's mm-hmm. kind of what springboarded me to take the leap of faith and
man
and leave it. So Jesus says, I love you. And so anyway, so then I come back out of this like trance or whatever I was in. And I'm thinking I'm in there for 5 or 10 minutes, but the room's empty now, and I'm the only one in the room. Crying, tears just flowing, like, you know. And so I tell the counselor what I witnessed, and she says that you suffer from a severe case of separation anxiety, that what they're finding out is that adopted kids that aren't held, that aren't reinforced in their love, if the parenting isn't, you know, just really, really nurturing so that the child, because the separation from the parents at birth is such a wound. You know, I mean, I was in the hospital for, I don't know, 3 weeks or whatever, 4 weeks before I was adopted. So, but in those early years, when you're not held and caressed, that what it does to you, you they're just now finding out what that does, you know. And so from then I went to Judy, my birth mother, from that experience, and I wanted to know why she gave me up for adoption. And she told me that she was 16 when she got pregnant, and that her parents didn't know, and she held it because her father would have killed her or whatever. It was just, you know, it was just not the thing to do. It was dishonorable to the family, kind of thing, which is why, because they lived closer to the hometown I'm from, but they went to Philippi to have me because it was in a town that wasn't associated. So they wouldn't know who she was. Right. So, she says, you know, I loved you so much and I really, really, I intended to keep you. She says, but the day you were born, that I knew that I couldn't give you the life that you deserved. So I gave you up for adoption because I loved you so much. And how does God work that I end up in an Italian Catholic musical family, all because a 16-year-old girl chooses life? Because she could have chose the other way. Mm-hmm. She said she had friends that said, you know, this is going to ruin your life and all that kind of stuff. And back then, you know, abortion and stuff was coat hanger deal.
Yep.
Gosh.
You know. So all my brothers and sisters, adopted brothers and sisters, all have a musical skill, but it's different. Each of us have a different type of musical skill. But in their family, in my biological family, there is no musical skill.
Really?
So the difference between, you know, if you want to kind of see how God works in mysterious ways, I mean, you know, that is truly a God moment. So
it is, yeah.
So I asked her about this one, you know, because I wanted some information about, you know, just health things, you know, for my own. And so I contacted Ron, and we just had a short, brief conversation, I think. And then I think it was about 07 or 08, something like that, that my brother-in-law had a kid out of wedlock, and his girlfriend at the time said, don't worry about it. I got this. We're moving to Cleveland. You don't have to worry about this child. Well, then 15 years later, she calls him up and she says, this boy looks just like you. And even though he's been raised by this other man, I don't know if I should tell him that you're his father or not. And so he's telling me this story. And so, I listened to it, and he said, I just want to let this boy know that my door's open. And so I ended up writing a song called My Door's Open based upon my adoption story and his story combined. And then I get he comes to an event that I'm playing, and you must have heard the song because he comes up to me and he says, I just want to let you know that my door's open.
Aw. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, of course, it's my understanding that my wife had known, and also that she sang in the funeral choir with your mom, John.
Yeah.
And so there was a connection there already. And I can remember sitting back there, choking up. Janie said, you go up there to that boy. And that's where it started. And it's been a great relationship ever since. we've bonded, and I think from his other family, we have three kids, John's just part of it, and the wife just open arms. So John's been part of our family ever since then. So
that's incredible.
Yeah.
You guys are making me cry. Jeez.
Yes, so maybe we should break for a song. Yeah. So how about that song you wanted was, how about Let Me Live?
That's good. That's the adoption video song that you did.
Yeah.
Which is great. I don't know whether you have seen it or not.
I have. Yeah, it really is good.
Yeah, so I wrote this with a couple people from Philadelphia who had adopted children. And so they started this program called Adoption is the Living Option. And so I wrote this song for their video. So this is called Let Me Live. So we'll be right back on Living Real Radio, brought to you by Closets by Design.
Come to know, I know you're scared and thinking just to let me go. I wish you could see, I wish you would dream and imagine who I could be. Let me live so I can dance. Let me give me a chance. I hear you cry and feel your pain, but please think of me. Let me live. Let me live. Our future is unknown. You are not alone. Don't be afraid. The clouds will clear.
The clouds will clear.
You will see what God has made.
What God has made.
Can you hear my voice through all the noise? Choose life and rejoice. So let me live so I can dance. Let me live. Give me a chance. Just maybe a family longing for a baby to love like me. Let me live,
let me live.
So, I can dance.
So I can dance.
Let me live,
let me live.
Give me a chance. Beat of life, I've come to know.
You're listening to Living Real Radio on Hippie Radio 94.5.
Welcome back to Living Real with your host, John Angotti, and I am Julianne Staley. And today we have John's birth father, Ron, who was just sharing before the break about when he came up to you to introduce himself and to tell you that his door is open. And I have a million questions and I don't even know where to begin. I just appreciate you guys sharing your story. But I've always wondered what it was like on the parent side of things for you when you first found out. What was your immediate reaction?
I think originally I accepted that. And again, you got to understand we're from the country.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows everybody. And so... You know, it was possible. And of course, when I found out, I'm already, I don't know how old, I'm 76 now. So you take that back, I'm probably in my 40s or 50s. So I was mature enough to be able to accept and to handle that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, the big thing was that, my wife and John's half-brothers and sisters, I mean, they certainly had no problem with it whatsoever and have brought him and his family in as just as part of ours. So, you know, I think the thought to begin with was, as John said, our door is open mm-hmm. in both ways. And that's where it is. And that's, it's become a good relationship. And hopefully John is feels much better about who he is mm-hmm. With regard to know where he come from. And so, I mean, he's really had, God's really given him a path of a lot of opportunities that adopted kids would not have. So
right.
I think he's fortunate in that, and he has chosen where he wants to go and with his ministries and so on. And you know, he's able to help other people. So.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, John.
Did you know when, did Judy not tell you in the beginning?
No.
She kept that all.
I mean, you know, I wasn't really in contact. You know, when you're already married and you already have kids, so that it's you know, one of those mm-hmm. those deals, because you don't want to hurt the family that you're with. So
yeah. I played for his son's wedding, but he didn't know that I was his son at that time.
Oh, no way.
It's that one was after we found out, and I can't remember what year it was. But
I didn't know that.
But John was the band, the Amici band, that the daughter, my daughter-in-law's family got for the wedding reception. And we've got pictures and videos of John up there with the boys and so on, singing and, you know, doing what they normally do at wedding receptions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't until after that, after we bonded, that we found out that it was John. And, you know, we have a picture of him with hair.
You don't say.
I'm better looking now.
Yeah.
I would say you usually get your hairline from your father, but I don't know if that's...
Oh, no, it comes from the mother.
Oh, does it come from the mother? It
comes from the mother's side. That's what I was told.
What's that?
Oh, yeah,
the hairline comes from the mother's
mistaken.
Side.
Oh, motorcycle?
I think
the mother's side.
Oh, your mother's side.
By seeing the hair, I think I was just thrown off by that.
Yeah. yeah, and that's the other thing. We all went to school together. I mean, his mother, my wife, and family. I mean, it was small town. So we all went to the same high school and wasn't a lot of people, wasn't a lot of students. So,
yeah.
And then with your siblings are all adopted, but where do you fall in order with them? Are you the oldest?
Of the adopted children?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the third.
Okay.
So I have an older brother and an older sister and a younger sister. And the thing that I see in all three of them, mainly the older two, is they suffer from the same dilemma, the same thing of separation anxiety, but they've never been able to deal with it. And I look at their lives and, you know, I can see where that really came into play with dealing with relationships. Both of them are divorced. You know, the things that, you know, this feeling of being loved, you know, I think at the end of the day, for everybody, what does people want the most, even though they may not be able to name it or claim it, I think is to be loved, is to know that you're
absolutely
loved and wanted and desired. And when you don't feel that way ever, you know, you just live in this, place that has a void, you know? And, so, and then there's this trust piece of it too, because you don't trust first off that you're lovable or that anybody could love you, you know? And that is a wound that's buried deep, from birth. So how do you reconcile that wound? You know, it's hard. So now when I look at situations and, you know, relationships and stuff, you know, I have to consciously remind myself that, you know, that you are loved or that you are lovable, even though, you know, depending on who you talk to, some people may say you're not so lovable, you know, but yeah.
I think one of the fallacies that we have, and I don't know what the educational system is today, or from a parental standpoint, what they're teaching their kids with reference to relationships at such a young age. So, I mean, if you don't have the knowledge that what you're doing and what the consequences are, then it's, you know, then we're going to have a lot more children out there that either are single parent mothers or up for adoption or the alternative, and that's bad. So that's I think it starts in the school system and at home, reinforced in the school system, but with educating from home. John, I don't know what your parents may have, adopted parents may have told you about relationships.
Well, you know, we weren't allowed to do anything.
good Catholics.
Yeah. I mean, there was nothing happening for sure. And otherwise you were going to hell, but we were always just told how wrong. And then it's kind of messed up though, too. Because you don't have a good understanding, I think, of a good relationship with your spouse or significant other in terms of even the physical part of the relationship. Because when you're brought up and told that everything's wrong and dirty, that in your mind, you have that, you know, but the natural piece of you wants to be with somebody or, you know what I mean? But it's all messed up, you know, don't you think? I mean, because then we're told it's all wrong, and but yet it's beautiful.
Absolutely. And I think now we have the opposite problem with this younger generation where they're told everything's right, you know, and everything's okay. And it's like, you're not valuing the human person anymore. Or in a relationship, you don't know how to value yourself or the person you're with, and they're not taught that respect and that love anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I feel like we've switched to the complete and other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Well, I think I think sex is such a powerful thing inside us. It has a lot of power over us, and unless it's encased in something holy, it can get out of hand.
Yeah,
you know, but whether in a relationship or whatever, or people want to look at it, you know, but nevertheless, encased in something that is beautiful and holy, because then it becomes ugly and then it turns into something that it shouldn't. And, you know, many of us have walked that path and seen things. And so therefore it messes with people's minds and you don't know what's what. Mm-hmm. And then when the world's trying to sell you all this stuff and then you're trying to make sense out of it, you know, that I think it can be confusing if there's not a good pathway or examples of what that could be, you know, in a relationship.
Definitely. I agree.
So, you know, you being a youth minister, I'm sure you see.
I do. And that's a hard piece because you lose the person and the person becomes an object for a lot of the kids with what they're seeing online and even in TV shows. I mean, we've talked about it before, but it's just completely destroying relationships, period. Because then people, and I mean, we're in this whole mess with like Facebook now. I don't know if you've been keeping up with
it. I saw something about it. What is it?
Yeah. And it's basically like they intentionally were trying to make kids feel worse about themselves in terms of their self-image, but then also they were targeting. So it's like the kids are already struggling and then you're going to add influence from media and whatnot to make them struggle even more. So then when they do turn to another actual person, they don't trust that person because it's not what they've been seeing online. You know, online tells you you're bad, crappy, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, no, you're good. And I'm like, no, I don't believe that because I was just online and it, you know, I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
So I think it's really difficult. And, you recognize kids who've been through stuff in terms of that relationships, whether it's intimate or not, kids go through stuff and you can tell right away when you're talking to a kid, like, oh, you've been hurt by this, or like a guy who's used you in a way that isn't recognizing your beauty and your worth, or a girl has used you in a way. And I think that's really sad to see so young, kids just not really knowing their worth and feeling that love in a way that like you being adopted, you talked about growing up and what that felt like, how you've had that separation anxiety, but now the world we're living in is like almost creating it for everyone.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want that for anyone.
Yeah.
You know how you felt. And it's just really sad.
I don't know how you rectify that. I mean, how do we reverse that? How do we create a new trend or a new something better, you know, to, I don't know.
Yeah. The question I'd have for you is, how would you be parenting your kids with reference to relationships and consequences and so on, you know, coming from a female perspective?
Oh boy. Well, I have a weird female perspective cause I have six brothers. So
yeah, but you are a female. So
I mean,
our urges as males, probably are about females must have the same urges.
I think it's twisted in a way because follow me for a second. And that males often, especially as teenagers and young adult men are very animalistic in how they act.
Absolutely.
Towards other people. Even, you know, towards other men, but especially females. And females have the opportunity to guide the males, but then they also have the peer pressure, like not necessarily as being placed on by the male, but just societal pressure of how they should respond. And then also they have their own self-confidence that they're dealing with. And so I think that's where relationships can get really wonky and out of sorts, is because they don't have themselves sorted. So like, even though the males are driven by desire, the females could respond and say, hey, let's talk about this. Let's work on ourselves. But they don't, because they don't want to not be liked because they're struggling with liking themselves. It's very, you know, women are complicated. I don't know if you've heard that a time or two before.
I have heard that a time or two.
Yeah. I see the female as the potential victim all the time.
Mm.
And, you know, particularly as teenagers, the female, how do you convince him, first of all, as a parent, not to put himself in a situation that could have the animalistic of the male?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no means no.
Right.
And to understand that the consequences is basically the guy don't care. The female is the one that's going to be the victim and have to live with it forever and ever.
Mm.
So, and you know, as you get older, then of course, both males and females, they understand that choices do have consequences, and whatever relationship you have is one that you have desire to bring about on your own, unlike when you're teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think there's something that is untapped in our society with female empowerment in that regard. Like, feminism is a big movement, but like really just looking at the female and how she can empower herself before she thinks about anyone else.
Right.
To be able to respond to those kinds of situations.
Yeah. It's a crazy world.
It is.
It's a crazy world.
It is.
Well, we're going to take a little pause here for the cause and play another song. And this is a song by Kenny Chesney, There Goes My Life. And tell us about why you picked that song.
Well, I was doing some research on there. And, of course, you have connections with Kenny Chesney. And I thought, well, maybe this would be good. But he did a video out there, this There Goes My Life. And it's about two teenagers and this teenage boy. Finds out that his girlfriend is pregnant and they're in school. And, he felt that, and that his life was over, because of this. And, the bottom line is, he stuck it out and had apparently got married or whatever, and had a little girl, and that was the light of his life. So, they didn't have to go through adoption or anything, but it was a young teenagers doing their thing, but they were able to bond and stick together.
Okay. All right. Here's There Goes My Life by Kenny Chesney. We'll be right back on Living Real Radio, brought to you by Closets by Design.
Hi, this is Greg. We're sorry, but we can't feature this particular song from our broadcast on our podcast. But there's a link to it in this episode's description. Thanks for listening to Living Real.
Benjamin Franklin once said, "There is a place for everything, everything in its place." For most of us, that's easier said than done. Let the professionals at Closets by Design help you find a place for all of your everythings. They're experts in maximizing your storage space by creating new organizational units for any space in your home. Imagine your home totally organized, along with your office, pantry, closet, or garage. Call locally owned Closets by Design today for your free in-home consultation and save 40% off their everyday low prices, plus receive free installation. They'll design and price your new space during the visit. Call 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700 or online at closetsbydesign.com.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio with Julianne Staley. And today we're talking with Ron Watson, who is my biological father, and this being Right to Life Month, we're talking about this adoption story. And we're going to head into towards older adopted children. I have some friends in Memphis who just adopted two young boys, I think 10, 9, 10, 11, something like that. And to make people aware that if you go online and you look up orphans or how to adopt children, thousands of kids are still waiting for a home. Thousands of kids. And you've had some dealings
for many years. I was a court appointed special advocate for abuse and neglect kids that fall into the system and become foster kids. And from my experience, the older ones that get placed by the court system, it's just a matter of time. Many of them end up back into the system, not only from the human resource standpoint, but from the criminal elements that come about. So, you know, it takes a special individual to understand where their roots were, where they came from, why they are where they're at, and what they want to do with their life, where they want to go. I still believe that if you have the willpower and what is to be, it's up to you. You can do anything you want. But many of them choose the easier way out, and that's with various crimes and drugs and so on. And
well, I just wonder if it's the predicament that they're in. So therefore, you know, the pain that they're feeling from being left alone.
It could be.
You, that's where addictions and things of that come in, because you're trying to ease the pain that is.
And they're not really the type of or the class of individuals that are adoptable. I mean, people want to adopt young, either at birth or 5-6 year olds. They don't want 14s, 15s. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've already set in their ways and have issues, and they're less likely to really be adopted. They'll just phase out of the foster care system.
It's tough to think about, but you know, it's hard on both ends, because when you're 14 or 15, you don't want to listen to somebody try and tell you what to do.
No.
I mean,
yeah, you're not my parent.
Right, yeah.
Whoever my parent may be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and at that age, you've already developed street smarts.
Yep.
And figured out how to get out of stuff and do whatever you need in order to survive. Yeah.
And there's a ton of great foster parents, but if you have a bad experience or two, you don't want to go back into a home.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And remember, these most of the foster care kids come from a family of whoever had their care are already in the system, too,
mm-hmm.
with abuse or drugs or other crimes. So,
yeah.
A lot of them raised by grandparents.
Yeah, grandparents definitely come into play a whole bunch. But anybody out there who's, you know, struggling with life, or, you know, if you're somebody who's in that situation of you're pregnant and don't want to be, please check out Adoption as a Loving Option. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of places. My friend Bob Perrin down in Orlando has a center for mothers that he brings them in and walks with them from, you know, through the whole process, so that the child can have life. And because I'm one of those kids.
Aren't you so glad you have life?
Yeah. I mean, I am a living example of, you know, somebody who could have been thrown off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And there is hope. And, you know, God is present, but God works through humanity. So people have to pick up the pace and do the things. And if there's any way to plead to those that are dealing with the adoption process, please make this easier or less expensive. I can't figure out why people have to pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to adopt a kid that costs nothing to make. I don't know. That's my...
I agree.
My advocate on there. But a little bit on Ron, just so you know, he's kind of a hero in some ways. He was a policeman in D.C.
Wow.
And was shot and flatlined a few times, but stopped a burglary.
Robbery.
A robbery. You can tell him the story there.
Yeah, I was a motorcycle cop in Washington in the 60s and 70s, and anyway, I stopped a vehicle that had just robbed a liquor store, and they were high on heroin, found out after the fact. But anyway, I had a little shootout a couple blocks from the Capitol, and took a couple shots in the chest and shoulder. And but I lived through the experience, and God put me... kept me here to at least for some purpose, and I think I have the purpose. So I was only 25 then.
Wow.
So had three kids plus John that I didn't know at the time. Anyway, that had an out-of-body experience on two occasions during that episode. So anyway, that's the short answer, John.
Yeah. You lived through it, and the person was taken care of.
Yeah. Instant justice, I think, is what we called it.
Yeah. Instant justice. So anyway, so that's... Well, I come from a cop background.
Man.
Because his daughter, Dawn, who's my half-sister, she's a sheriff, county sheriff, deputy sheriff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Process server.
And
two half brothers. One is works two blocks from the Capitol with the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and the other one's a retired. Ronnie's retired deputy sheriff from Jacksonville, Florida. So
yeah.
And his mom, or my wife, she retired from Clarksburg Police Department as the admin officer for the chief. So.
Mm-hmm. So growing up in my hometown, when I'd get in trouble, by the time I got home, if I got a ticket, like a speeding ticket, by the time I got home, my father already knew, you know, so you couldn't get away with anything in these small little towns.
But also, if you get in trouble, you have...
That's true. If you get in trouble, you...
Have him on speed dial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, back in that, there was a lot of fear. You didn't want to get in trouble because you knew that your parents would... You know, get the switch or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's how I grew up, too.
Yeah. You know, you had that bit of fear factor, so you didn't want to disappoint your parents, because that was probably the worst thing, was to disappoint them and that kind of thing. So that's their story, and that's when we're sticking to it.
We're going to stick to it. That's it.
And that's right. That's right. So beautiful things come out of tragedy, you know, where...
Yeah.
I think we see that all the time. What's going on with...
Well, we have a break this week. It's fall break.
Oh, that's right. Fall break is up.
Yep. But then coming up on October 30th, we have the Epic Retreat. And we'll have a magician, which is going to be really cool. Robert Fiducia will be there.
Is he the magician? Magician?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think so. He's just a funny guy.
Yeah. But it's going to be a great retreat. And it's open to all middle schoolers. And it's at the Factory in Franklin, which is really cool. So.
And anybody can sign up for that?
Yes. The tickets are on Eventbrite, which Greg knows about and can fill in more details about it. But it's coming up on October 30th. Still plenty of time to get tickets.
Okay. Yeah. Great. And we got our 150th celebration coming up. And what's unique about the 150th is that our 150th show, like, this is 148. Mm. So we'll have next week, and then the week after leads right into our 150th anniversary. So the 150th Living Real show will be in celebration of the 150th anniversary of St. Philip, so make sure we tune in for that.
Great planning, John. I know you didn't.
No, that's a Holy Spirit thing. It just worked out amazingly, you know, but that's the way it is. So we're going to go out with the song What a Wonderful World.
Yeah.
That Ron picked on that. And why did you pick that song?
Well, I just think that if you close your eyes and just listen to the words, and it just let you just float on out of there. And I thought that would be appropriate for this. Ending.
Yeah. And just a message to anybody who's struggling, you know, with adoption, please seek help. I truly feel counseling is a great thing. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's looking to adopt, please look at some of these older kids that are wonderful, beautiful kids. These friends of mine in Memphis, Lindsay and Ray Mullins, adopted two older teenage kids, are almost teenagers, and I see their pictures on Facebook, and it looks like just a wonderful, beautiful family. So there's a lot of people out there that need love, and if you got love to give, you can find it in helping out a child who needs to know that they are lovable. So, and to know that even with all its treachery and sometimes the sadness and the suffering, and the sometimes we look turn on the news, that still at the end of the day, it's still a wonderful world. So thank you all for listening to Living Real Radio, brought to you by Closets by Design.
You've been listening to Living Real Radio, real issues in real time, with your host, John Angotti, Greg Walton, and Julianne Staley. Be sure to tune in every week at 8 a.m. to Living Real Radio. Living Real Radio is sponsored by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized by Closets by Design. Call them today to schedule your appointment at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.